Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
According to a nationwide customer survey, Americans have named Taco Bell as the best Mexican restaurant in the U.S. Said Mexico, okay, yeah, we're ready for the wall. Just do it.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to author Ingrid Rojas Contreras, who also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
The president is peddling another insane conspiracy theory about the death toll in Puerto Rico as Republicans brace themselves for the midterms. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. The president has been going on TV basically every day to try to convince people that he's competent as a potentially devastating hurricane bears down on the East Coast. Lately, he's taken to posting videos to Twitter, but it's clear from the quality of these videos that he's just making his staffers point a camera at him while he rambles off the top of his head. Yesterday, for example, he tried to reassure people that his government was ready for Hurricane Florence.
Hurricane Florence is fast approaching. It's going to be here over the next 48 hours. We'll handle it. We're ready. We're able. We've got the finest people, I think, anywhere in the world. Get out of its way. Don't play games with it. It's a big one. We are ready. But despite that, bad things can happen when you're talking about a storm this size. It's called Mother Nature. You never know, but we know.
That video is like a local news report where the meteorologist called in sick and the sports guy had to fill in at the last minute. The hurricane came to play, but the first responders left it all out on the field. In the end, it comes down to turnovers. If you want people to take your message seriously, maybe have higher production quality than a mid-level YouTube star. The storm is big. Get out of the way. But before you do, please like and subscribe. And if that didn't do enough, to relieve people's worst fears, the White House also released this photo of Trump on the phone while Chief of Staff John Kelly and Vice President Mike Pence look at some printouts. Oh, well, that's reassuring. They look like they're ordering Chinese food.
I'll go ahead and dial. You guys just pick 4 or 5 things we could share.
And as a life-threatening storm bears down on the East Coast, Trump has also been bragging about his handling of the humanitarian disaster in Puerto Rico, which left nearly 3,000 American citizens dead. Now, that is the official death toll from an independent study commissioned by Puerto Rico's government, and yet our deranged president doesn't believe it.
He says, 3,000 people did not die in the two hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico. When I left the island after the storm had hit, they had anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths. As time went by, it did not go up by much. Then a long time later, they started to report really large numbers like 3,000. He then says in a second tweet, this was done by Democrats in order to make me look as bad as possible when I was successfully raising billions of dollars to help Puerto Rico. If a person died for any reason, like old age, just add them onto the list. Bad politics. I love Puerto Rico.
That's the official death toll, you lunatic. Now we know why he's so orange. His brain is just melted pumpkin guts. Do you need a book? We don't need a book. We don't need an anonymous op-ed to tell us that the president is an addled narcissist who peddles one conspiracy theory after another. He said the first black president wasn't born here. He said 3 million people voted illegally. He said Muslims celebrated on 9/11 and thinks you get superpowers from staring directly into the sun.
May the power of the sky lamp fill my muscles.
Now, Trump's incompetence and erratic behavior are posing major political problems for Republicans as the fall campaign season gets underway. A slew of new polls have given Democrats a major edge in the midterm elections. GOP Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell even admitted this week that some of those races will be tough for Republicans, using a colorful metaphor.
We know this is going to be a very challenging election on the Senate side. I'll just list you a bunch of races that are dead even. Arizona, Nevada, Tennessee, Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, West Virginia, and Florida. All of them too close to call, and every one of them like a knife fight in an alley. I mean, just a brawl.
I seriously doubt Mitch McConnell has ever been in a fight or in an alley. He should use a metaphor he can relate to.
These elections are like when you order a steak medium rare and you get it medium, and your wife says you should send it back, but you just eat it, and then your wife thinks you're a coward. But she doesn't say that. She's just real quiet the rest of the night. It's like that.
Now, one of those knife fights is happening in Texas, where Democrat Beto O'Rourke is running neck and no neck with Republican Senator Ted Cruz. In public, Republicans are bullish on Cruz's re-election chances, but this week we found out that they are much more pessimistic in private after the New York Times obtained private comments from a top Trump aide suggesting that Cruz might lose because no one likes him.
At a private gathering over the weekend, White House Budget Director Mitt Mulvaney warned Republican donors and party officials that the party was battling serious vulnerabilities in the upcoming midterms. According to the New York Times, Mulvaney raised the prospect that Senator Ted Cruz of Texas could actually lose his bid for re-election because he's not seen as likable enough.
He said this in private. There is a very real possibility that we will win a race for Senate in Florida and lose a race in Texas for Senate. I don't think it's likely, but it's a possibility. How likable is the candidate? That still counts.
So Ted Cruz debased himself by cozying up to Donald Trump, a guy who insulted his wife and said his dad killed JFK. And in return, they call him unlikable behind his back. That is rough. You know, I feel like I should say something nice about Ted Cruz just to balance it out. So let me try. He's not here? Now, Democrats face an uphill battle to retake the Senate, but if they're close in Texas, they have a chance, which is why the GOP is trying a new tactic to motivate their base, dangling the threat of impeachment. Last week, for example, Trump told his supporters that if he's impeached by a Democratic Congress, it will be their fault.
They like to use the impeach word, impeach Trump. Maxine Waters, we will impeach him. But he didn't do anything wrong. It doesn't matter. We will impeach him. It's so ridiculous. But Don't worry about that if it ever happens. But if it does happen, it's your fault because you didn't go out to vote.
Sorry, real quick. Can we just go back to that first part?
They like to use the impeach word.
Yeah, that's the word. Impeach is the impeach word. Did you mean to say the I word? Because that would make sense. Trump has zero subtlety. He's like a guy spelling out dirty words around his kids. She had nice B-O-O-B-S. You know, boobs. And Republicans are also marshaling every member of the Trump family they can get, like Donald Trump Jr., who's been campaigning for Republicans across the country and did a rare sit-down interview with ABC this week about the midterms.
Trump Jr. says the November midterms will inevitably be a referendum on his father, one where historical odds suggest Democrats could win back the House. And he worries that could spell political catastrophe for his father.
So our people, the MAGA people, they have to turn up. They have to get out and vote. And I think we can break history.
Oh, I think you broke it already. The rest of us are trying to piece it back together like a vase after a house party. What happened to your vase? Oh, some douche came over and drank beer out of it. And then I said, you got to pay for my vase. And he said, do you know who my dad is? And I said, everyone knows who your dad is because you have the same name, dummy. And then he started to cry and said, I wish I was Ivanka. So I felt bad. And I said, it's okay. You don't have to pay for the vase. And then he said, psych, and broke another vase. He's a real d***head. And Don Jr. isn't the only Trump son showing up on TV to support his father and get Republicans out to vote. Yesterday, Eric Trump went on Fox News and rambled about the possibility that Democrats might impeach Trump if they win in November. But the most jarring part of that interview came when Eric was asked about famed journalist Bob Woodward's new book, Fear, a damaging insider's account of the Trump White House, and he decided to toss out some casual anti-Semitism that was not only offensive, but very hard to follow.
You can write some sensational nonsense book. CNN will definitely have you on there because they love to trash the president. It'll mean you sell three extra books, you make three extra shekels. I mean, at the behest of the American people, at the behest of our country.
Not only is that anti-Semitic, but you don't know what the word behest means. My father's amazing. He's the behest president we've ever had. But Democrats aren't running on Woodward's book or even impeachment, really. They're running entirely on issues like health care and specifically Medicare for All, an idea that not too long ago was considered a fringe pie-in-the-sky idea and is now so mainstream, former President Obama endorsed it last week.
Democrats aren't just running on good old ideas like a higher minimum wage. They're running on good new ideas like Medicare for All.
Damn! When Bernie Sanders heard that, he got so excited his hair combed itself. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen in November, but this week has shown that the choice could not be clearer. I don't know if the blue wave is coming, but if it is, the president better...
get out of its way.
This has been A Closer Look.
If you enjoyed A Closer Look, be on the lookout for a new edition of the Late Night Podcast exclusive political segment, Midterm Cram, this coming Monday. Until November's elections, Late Night staffers Sal Gentile and Henry Melcher, along with some special guests, will guide you through the news with intelligence and humor in special episodes released on the Late Night Podcast feed. Now, let's get back to the show.
Our guest tonight is an award-winning writer whose critically acclaimed debut novel, Fruit of the Drunken Tree, is on sale now. Please welcome to the show Ingrid Rojas Contreras, everyone. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm really good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I loved your book. This is a story that takes place in Colombia during the reign of Pablo Escobar, and it's told from the perspectives of two young women. And this was a very personal story for you. This was inspired a great deal by your own biography.
Yeah, this is true. I grew up in Colombia, and I was very lucky to be in a family where my parents came from. They were very poor families. And I went from living at home to experiencing the two Colombias that exist. And the other thing that inspired this book was my mother would take in girls who had been displaced by the Civil War in Colombia. And they would live in our house, and they would be our nannies, and they would do maid's work. They would live with us. And some of my earliest memories was listening to these women talk and talk, you know, tell us about their lives, which were starkly different than what I was living.
And so at a very young age, you became aware, much in the way the character in the book does, of class and of you having more advantage than others. Was that something you always thought you'd write about?
It wasn't something that I always thought I would write about, but it was something that stayed with me as a piece of knowledge that maybe not a lot of people had. And so I felt an urgency when I started to write to address it. And one of the things that made me realize just the difference in the lives and the quality of life was that when we would go and visit my family in the northeastern part of Colombia, we would have dinner together and we would, you know, buy food and bring food with us. And I would hear my cousins say things like, "Oh, now we're eating like kings. There's so much food." And the food that we would bring with us would be we just bought fried chicken.
So I want to ask about this as well, because you said a lot of you is in the character Chula, which is the young girl. Your parents, your family, were they the inspiration for your family in the book as well?
Yeah.
And were they excited or upset that you were about to put them in a novel?
I was very lucky to have family members who are all very outgoing, and they love to, you know, hear people talk about them. So when I told them I'm writing a book about you, they were very excited.
Yeah. Even though, you know, some of the, certainly the parents are not the most moral people in the book. Did your parents appreciate that was a fictionalized version?
Not so much, but I would call them, especially my mom, because I love the way that she reacts to things. I would call her, and I would say, "Guess what? Your character is having an affair now." And she, in her best, you know, telenovela voice, she would be like, "No, like, tell me everything. Why did I do that?"
And your mother, obviously, Spanish is her first language. She speaks some English. And you have noticed that her English is changing a bit based on the TV she's watching?
Yeah, my brother-in-law was on a Property Brothers show.
Okay.
And so my mother was staying with my sister, and she would watch the show endlessly. And she started to watch all these home improvement shows, and she started to pick up English from that. So, you know, now when I bring her coffee, she'll be like, "It's my dream. It's huge. I love it."
And this is great. I mean, because, again, I found this book so engaging. It's like a wonderful book about how children see very scary things while they're happening. Obviously, you know, it's happening during this really scary time in Colombia. But also, this is a crazy real detail about your life. Your mother ran a fortune-telling business out of your attic.
Yeah, this is true.
And so what was that like?
My father had just lost his job at the time. And so my mother started a fortune-telling business in the attic. And she, you know, one of my favorite pastimes when I was young was to watch the people who came and went. There was one woman she wore these stylish ponchos. And she would always come, and she was a complete mystery to us because she always asked about dates. She wanted to know if a date was auspicious or inauspicious. And I had my own theory. I told my mom, she's probably a wedding planner.
Oh, that would be a good way to ask. Yeah. Of course, you'd want to know that.
My mom, she thought maybe there's something there, but she didn't quite want to ask because we needed the money.
Right.
And there was one time where she came back, the woman came back, and she was very thankful, and she brought an envelope with tickets and a hotel stay, all paid expenses in Medellin, and we begged my mother to take it. We were like, "You never take us anywhere, like, please take us, you know, we'll never get to experience this again." We went to Medellin, and we were kind of followed around by the staff. And everything we did, you know, if I tried to take a sweater off, somebody would come and take it off for me and, like, drape it on a chair. So we got increasingly suspicious.
Yeah, that's this is not wedding behavior. Yeah.
And so when we came back to Bogota, and my mother kind of asked her, so, but you're not a mule, are you? And she kind of said it jokingly.
Not a drug mule.
Yeah, yeah. Not a drug mule, right? And she said it as a joke. And the woman said, no, that's people who work for me are, though.
I'm like in charge of the drug mules. Yeah. And did that then make you feel a little guilty about taking the all-expense-paid trip to Medellin?
Of course, yeah. And we found out that she worked for Pablo Escobar. And we were so terrified about receiving blood money that we just went to the church and we had a priest bless us with holy water.
Well, obviously, that worked out because you're okay. The book is great, and thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Ingrid Rojas Contreras, everybody. Fruit of the Drunken Tree is available wherever books are sold.
Hi, everyone. This is Sarah from Late Night. I'm here with Ingrid Rojas Contreras, author of Fruit of the Drunken Tree. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you spoke to Seth a little bit about your history and how that informed the novel that you wrote. When you left Colombia and your family left, you first moved to Venezuela.
That's
and
right.
you were about 14?
Yes.
And you started writing in English when you were there. Why did you choose to do that as opposed to writing in Spanish?
I think I was in a place where I missed Colombia a lot. And I wanted to talk about it secretly. And English was a language that my parents didn't speak. So it was the ultimate diary that a young girl could have. And I started writing then in English. And I fell in love with English as an immigrant, just to address myself in a tongue that wasn't my own.
What kind of things did you write?
So I would write long-winded descriptions of things around the house. So I would sit before a glass full of water, and I would write about it for pages. And then the other things that I would write were very short stories.
One of the other things that I found so interesting in the novel was this idea that people don't have a choice sometimes when they join guerrilla forces. And I think that's something that maybe as an American person who doesn't really know the history of Colombia, that you think that it is a choice, but it's not. You sort of describe different ways that people join. Can you explain that?
Yeah, because the war had gone on for so long, there's a lot of people who have some kind of history with the violence and the civil war. So I talked to a former guerrilla member who told me that he joined the guerrillas because the paramilitary had killed his uncle. And that was the same reason why his father had joined. But then one of his, I think an aunt or a cousin, I can't remember, was raped by a guerrilla member. And so he switched and he joined the paramilitary at that point. So there's a lot of, some people have personal reasons that have to do with history. And then other people join for political reasons. And then other people, like Petrona, the character in the book, are kind of forced to join. They're threatened to join.
Yeah. You said you spoke to a former guerrilla member. Have you had reactions from people who have had similar experiences either to yours or other characters in the book after you've written this?
I haven't. Well, I think once the translation comes out and maybe it goes to Colombia, I think I will hear a lot more. Mm-hmm. So far, I've heard from Colombians who left the country and came to the U.S. and they were fleeing the violence. And it's wonderful as a writer to hear that what you've written resonates with someone's experience. So I've heard that, and that's been very meaningful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And going off on that, you actually teach writing. You teach at a university, but you also teach writing to high school students, immigrants also. How much of your story and who you are and your experiences, how much has that informed what you talk to your students about or advice that you give them?
I love my students so much. And I felt, especially now, I felt it was very important for them to have someone who is invested in their stories and is interested in their stories. And a lot of the things that I teach them or that I ask them to write about are things that I wish someone would have told me when I was their age. So I'll tease out, how did you come here? How did your family come here? What are some of the stories that your family used to tell? And we just share all of them, and we create this space where their experiences are valued.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.